Gentlemen, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Audrey.
Pleasure to be here.
You've put together a book called Dynamic Focus, and it's described as a how-to guide for creating greater significance in your life, both at home and at work. That's a tall order. Who is your book for?
I think our book is for anyone who's interested in being more effective in life, in their personal life, in their family, in their business or organization.
Wayne, could you just explain what dynamic focus means?
We look at the way people perceive information. And one of the big pieces that we deal with in the first section of the book is how our perceptions get locked in. We can focus on what to do and actually create a hyper-focus on doing because we get rewarded for it. Dynamic focus is about holding the large perspective, the purpose of your life, the purpose of what you're doing, the larger context in the same field of vision as what you're doing, and so that you're able to scale your perspective between the two of them. It's like a third perspective. If one of them is about the larger transformational part of your life, you know, what my purpose is, the significance I want to leave behind, what this means to me, and then the other part of it is about what do I have to do to make that come to reality. The third perspective, the larger perspective that we're talking about in terms of dynamic focus, is being able to have both of those in your field of vision simultaneously. And so you can move back and forth, and that requires some dynamic work.
You know, at this time of year, we're getting close to the point in – you know, the natural cycle of things when people start to make New Year's resolutions. And so they frequently are trying to find that balance between, you know, work and home life and being able to stay true to their nature. How do they do that?
One of the things to recognize is that the conscious mind is only about 4 or 5%. We're only aware of about 4 or 5% of what's actually going on. And the unconscious is far more powerful. In fact, it's said the unconscious is 1,000,000 times more powerful than the conscious mind. So when you make a resolution with your conscious mind, you've got all this power of these habits and these old ways of being. And unless you actually find a really strong way of anchoring in the larger perspective, the larger sense of purpose, then that resolution will be dead in 90 days.
We have habits that we developed over our lifetime, which are very good for us. They make our lives easy and simple. But at the same time, they eliminate a lot of information. One of the things we found in doing our research is that information can be deleted from our perceptual field of awareness all the way down to the cellular level of our body. And so once we actually become locked in as saying, this is the way the world is, this is who I am, and we have it in there, we essentially wire it into our systems. One of the neat things about the human body is that you can rewire to a larger perspective and shift that. But it takes work. And I think one of the messages of our book is that don't live life on autopilot.
Right.
You know, run your own life. Be aware of it and be conscious of where you get bogged down and be conscious of where you need to expand and then make your decision as opposed to just running on routine.
So it's taking power for your life and taking charge, but it means understanding how your mind works and the mental models. That's what we're calling spells. A spell is a cognitive pattern that is repeated that you're largely unconscious of or wholly unconscious of. And because of that, as Wayne has said, it limits your perceptions. And you have to break that spell to get outside that bottled way of thinking, that limited way of thinking, in order to see. If you don't break that perception, you have what we call false choice. So I either do what I love or I have to support my family. Well, that's a false choice. How can you bring what you love into what you do? So it's just expanding that perspective and beginning to realize the way I've looked at the world, constructed the world, isn't necessarily and absolutely isn't the way it is. It's just a representation.
And I think for a lot of people, they don't even recognize when they are, as you say, spellbound.
That's absolutely true. And it is difficult to work with. But what we do know is that when you go against what you're trained into in terms of your perception, it doesn't feel right. And your emotions respond that way. It doesn't feel right. There's a gut feeling. No, this is not natural. This is not the way I know myself to be. This is not the world I think I live in. You're asking me to do something very different. And part of that is could be very intuitive to saying you're absolutely correct. You shouldn't be doing it. But another part of it could be the unconscious mind just programming what you're aware of consciously. And that needs to be worked on. And so it takes a great deal of effort and judgment to know where to put your development, where to put the effort for change, because you have to sort out what's important And that's why in our work we look at purpose, the larger context, and say, if this is what you want to do long term, this is what you stand for, who you are, and you stand for this and you work into it, then you match up what you do, what you see, and what you perceive into that field and say, does it match? If it doesn't, explore it and investigate it. Just don't go arbitrarily and delete information and delete options from your life.
Audrey, one way to think about it is the first third of the book is about the nature of the mind, what a spell is. It's unconscious. We're trapped unless we break it. The second two-thirds of the book is the dynamic development cycle and how to break spells. So we're not so much interested in describing why we're trapped so much as to give people an understanding of that and then focus on how do you get out, what do you do, so it's practical and useful for people.
Now, you bring this message to organizations around the world. So how is it received? Are people eager to dive into this kind of soul-searching work?
The organizations that are on the leading edge, absolutely. The top 5%, they're eager for it. Organizations that realize they've got to make another change, they don't quite know how to do it, and they're running into problems, they're eager for it. The vast majority of organizations, they have trouble with it. But once they understand it, once we find a leader who is open, then the effectiveness and the proficiency, that's how our practices grow, is because they actually get results that make a difference.
I can give you an example. Recently, I was working with three vice presidents of a major company who have had a difficult relationship over the last 5 years, and they've been stuck. And so what we did is we went in and we created processes to help them see where their assumptions and expectations of each other created spells for them to get trapped in about each other. So when they would see symptoms of their spell manifested by the other persons that they were having difficulty with, they would go, aha, I knew I was right about that person. And so the cycles perpetuated. What we did is we expanded their awareness of what their cycles were and showed them where they had assumptions that weren't true. And when they saw that, they began to realize, oh, my God, I've created this problem. It's not real. And they began putting steps in place to resolve it. So the awareness of where you're stuck and where spells are operating sometimes is all that you need in order for people to step beyond them.
So the first step is, I guess, doing a gut check and seeing if things are not feeling correct for you. So what's the second step?
Well, once you say where we are, what's going on isn't working, really we say the first way you break through after that awareness is you focus on core purpose. Why are you here? Who are you? What is the purpose of your organization? What's the fundamental social need it meets? Are you focused on that purpose? Because that is going to be the anchor, which is going to inform everything else. So our first step in breaking free, once you have the awareness, is focus on purpose.
After you do that, then you have to really not just do a gut check, but also do a mind check. And listen to that little voice inside of you. It's called self-talk. It's been explored since the time of Plato. And see what it's saying on a constant basis. What script is that running on? And then look for other sources of scripts and ask, how would this be seen from a different perspective? One of the interesting pieces of data that we came across is that Dusty runs a leadership program, and he's run it for over 20 years now. And a PhD student came in and did her dissertation on that project. And what she found was that the people who are able to take the leadership training processes that Dusty was teaching and make the most out of them were the ones who engaged in a process called rich internal dialogue. They would take it and they would look at the information from multiple points of view internally and figure out how to apply it and what that actually means. They got more use long-term out of the training, the development, the leadership program, than the people who went in and just looked at it from their own parochial point of view, saying, oh, that's not the way I operate. This is the way I am. This fits, that doesn't, and cherry pick. They got much less out of it, and it was far less relevant to them into the future. And so that ability to really watch your thinking and see how you process information is a skill set. And we teach that as part of the process.
And as part of this, what we call rich internal dialogue is it opens you up to rich external dialogue. So you're listening to other perspectives. You're listening to contrary viewpoints. In fact, some of the very best leaders ask for somebody to argue the contrary viewpoint to theirs. So it's the opposite of yes people. It's people who are going to challenge the thinking and challenge the paradigm. When you expand perspective consistent with your purpose, you now can identify what we call critical factors. So step 3 in the dynamic development cycle is, what are the critical factors? You know, and we look at those, Wendy and I describe those as leverage points. They're points like acupuncture or acupressure. It's a point of greatest potential. Of all the dozens of things we could do, what are the two or three that are going to give us the highest gain, the two things we focus on that give us 80% of the return? And being able to identify those critical factors so you can focus on them makes all the difference in the world.
And then after you do that, then you decide, okay, if those are the critical factors, what am I going to do that really puts those into action for me? And that is two or three behaviors, things to do. And then the last step of the model is the results part, which is you go back and you check your progress. So it's not just a one-and-done approach. It's a continual learning loop that you're always looking and seeing, okay, am I getting the results I'm looking for? If not, let's go back to purpose and see, where am I off on my – anything misstated there? Did I get that right? Okay. And then you go through all the other steps and you look for where you can tweak, and you continually hone and sharpen it going forward. So it's a continual learning process into the future that yields results that you're proud of and that match with what you stand for.
We mentioned a moment ago that you do these workshops around the globe. Can you talk about any of the companies or organizations locally who have adopted this?
Well, Greensboro Police Department has used the concepts to lay out a strategy map for how they're going to move forward. We work with Lorillard. We're doing some work with teams there, not with the senior team yet, but with other teams in terms of expanding their capacity to be more effective. VF, you've worked with VF?
Yeah, I haven't done anything with them in quite a while. We do run a program here in Greensboro where we have people from various companies come into the program, and we teach the methodology. It's a 2.5-day program, and we actually use the first four of those programs to help sharpen the material in the book. We tested the methodology in the program to make sure we had the wording down right and the processes, and so we fine-tuned it through that. And we run this program, I think we're going to do it 3 times next year, and it's been getting great results. So locally, we have people from various organizations coming in, and we have people coming in from Florida and other parts of the country.
Okay. Well, you have answered the questions that I had on my sheet of paper and more. Is there anything major that I missed that we need to talk about?
No, I would only say that as you look at Washington, the Congress, and what's going on, from our perspective, they're trapped in a transactional trap. My narrow perspective, this little way of looking at the world, and they've lost sight of the larger transformational, the larger space. And what we need is our leaders who are really looking at being more inclusive in the perceptual field and are anchored to a larger sense of purpose, what we call the transformational space.
That's one of the big pieces in our work, is that we find that there's so much reward for what you do and maintaining higher levels of proficiency and effectiveness in getting things done, that sometimes the purpose gets lost. You know, the larger field gets shrunk down because the reward is really on the production side, getting results. You know, if you step in an elevator and the CEO goes, "What have you done for me today?" That's transactional. And that is important that it happens, but we want it linked to a larger perspective. And that linkage gets broken very easily. And so it's a constant force of reinforcement for us to go back and say, okay, what does it mean that you'll be able to improve productivity 25% over here? What's the overall impact on the organization? Are your systems stressed? Do you have the right information coming in? Do you have the right supplies? What's happening to the people? Are you building the organization, or are you sapping its core by forcing a focus on doing as opposed to a larger preference for what do we stand for, what are we creating, and how is that manifesting through the work that we're doing? That's the linkage that I look for, and I think Dusty ties in with that very strongly.
So, okay. So you brought up something that I had meant to talk about, so thank you for bringing it up. So your diagnosis and recommendation for the U.S. Congress right now?
Massive replacement. Yeah. I think transplants would be really useful.
One of the first questions we always ask is, do you have the right people in the right places, in the right slots in your organization? And I would have to say on the whole that I think that the answer is no. I don't think we have the right people there. And, you know, it's almost cannibalism going on in terms of what happens inside the way that the political side of the government operates. Now, both Dusty and I have clients inside the government, and there's agencies that we think are stellar, you know, that just do a wonderful job. Mm-hmm. The political side creates an awful lot of havoc, and the sources of information are very, very narrow. The perspectives are very narrow. There are ideological wars happening in Congress that do not serve the nation, and they really need to be addressed, seen for what they are, and taken apart, because they don't take us to where we need to be as a nation.
If you go back in history, you look at Tip O'Neill, ultra-liberal. You look at Ronald Reagan, arch-conservative. The two men had very different perspectives, but they shared one common perspective, which is doing the best for this country and for the people in it. And they worked together. They got legislation done. Neither of them threatened to shut down the government. There weren't any ultimatums. They worked things out. And I think that's true with the very best leaders. I think Chris Christie, the governor of New Jersey, is showing that, that you reach out to different constituencies, different viewpoints. You go places where you're not welcome, and you talk to people. You listen to them. They listen to you. It's the dialogue and discussion which is the richness that allows us to grow and learn. And that's missing sorely in D.C. right now.
One of the things we look for is, you know, whether the leadership is building the organization, whether it's Congress for the nation or whether it's a company, or whether it's eroding the core.
Yes.
And right now it looks like our leadership is willing to erode the core. And that is not right. The country deserves better.
So if this was a company that you were walking into to do one of your programs with, what would you do?
Well, first of all, a company like this would never invite us in because people on the extremes would have to give up the extremes and would have to come towards the middle for a common field of understanding. And if we were doing it, the first thing would be to gather data from the customers, the constituents, the citizens, and have that data really shared so we look at the larger perspective. And from that, talk about what is the fundamental reason you're here? And do we have a common ground? So we would look to create a common circle. It's like when I talk about drawing the larger circle, it comes from a concept Edwin Markham, the poet, put in his poem Outwitted. He drew a circle to shut me out, heretic rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew the circle which drew him in. How do we draw the larger circle? The great leaders in the world, like a Gandhi or Nelson Mandela, they drew very large circles. When people draw small circles, they create evil. Because it's my reality, my viewpoint, my perspective versus yours, and I throw stones at you. Well, can we find a way to draw that larger circle that really will allow people to come together? And that's what we look for. What's the larger circle we could draw in D.C.? And where can we begin to get people to come together so you build a mass of greater openness to dialogue and discussion?
The problem with D.C. is also when we work with our organizations, usually the power is centered inside the organization in a identifiable and a tangible way. In the political system, power is dispersed. It is not just the members of Congress, but those PACs and those foundations that influence them, because they can throw money at their election and influence whether those people will be here long term. So it is not just can they get along with each other in Congress. They have many constituents that are extraordinarily powerful. And what happens is that they have to play to them. You know, when you get rated by several different foundations and that rating then translates into where money goes in your next election and whether or not you're going to have a really solid adversary to take your position, the people that you represent are no longer your immediate concern, because what happens, we know, is that money thrown into election can sway public opinion. It happens every election. Mm-hmm. So it's not as easy to get your hand around because the power sources are so diverse and powerful.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much for coming in.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
It was a pleasure. Thank you, Audrey.